Blog Talk Radio.
Friday night, and that familiar beacon means it's time for the political consciousness of West Coast Steelers fans. That be me. Follow me on Facebook. It's James E. King. You can follow our pages. On Thursday, we do sports, and on Monday, Tuesday, and Sunday, we do boxing, but right now, let's talk a little politics, and right now, we have a very special guest on the line. He's for those of you that follow Adult Swim, he's probably one of your favorite actors. For those of us that are Vietnam veterans, he's a very outspoken advocate, and we appreciate having him on the show, Mr. William Trevizio. Tarkowski.
Yes.
That all up. So,
that's all right. I'm used to that.
you can scold me now and give me the correct pronunciation.
Easy. Tarkowski.
Okay. All right. Okay. See, you try to be too fancy and you always put your foot in your mouth, right?
That's a go. I understand, James. I understand.
But what we old soldiers call a food bar, right?
Yeah.
So, sir, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing lovely. Sitting here relaxing, talking to my friends on the West Coast. I actually have some friends in the San Diego Entertainment Facebook group. I don't know if any of them subscribe, but if they do, hey, guys, how you doing?
Well, if they didn't before, maybe they will now. We're gonna talk some serious stuff, and, you know, we're going to kind of keep it on a light level, even though I guess in some ways the fate of our country and some of the things that we have been through as Vietnam veterans. It's very disturbing to see this man in the highest office of the land. I know a lot of my feelings are based on his actions during the war, and then he comes out with some of the most ridiculous claims in the world concerning veterans. He uses us as pawns, political pieces. He doesn't take the advice of the generals, so he says. But let's talk a little facts here, because he claims that veterans are high priority and that he won't forgive Obama for the state of the military when he came to office. So I thought I'd bring up some facts, and then I'd ask you for your thoughts. In March, his secretary, Sulkin, was thrown out after an investigation into ethics and misuse of taxpayer funds. Then he appointed his personal physician. Trump has given the military the lowest pay raise in a decade, even though he seems to think that because he announces it to the American public, that we're supposed to swallow it. If you go to VA hospitals, you know that there are certain vocations that are frozen, and most of those have to do with support positions, such as the nurses, the aides, the interns, x-ray technicians, and things like that. We've also found out in the last couple of days that approximately 83,000 veterans are without their GI Bill payments, and the VA says that, hey, there's no deadline or immediate signs of it being fixed. This is a 50-year-old system. So tell me your thoughts on Trump's boasts on high priority that the military seems to be for this administration.
The man lies, and his base loves it. Anybody that's got a brain knows that what he says is not true. Just a recent article I read today about his original statement. It was running in 2016. The physician, his personal physician, says he wrote his own physical statement about his health. And I don't know. It just he's a pathological liar. I myself am a client of the VA's health system. Through my service, I have free lifetime medical health care from the VA, and I have watched it steadily improve. For the 10 years ago, it started to continually improve. We start building local clinics where you didn't have to travel 2 hours to get to a major big system. But now I don't see any more improvements. I see them trying to take the VA apart and shift the care to his for-profit people, keeping the budget the same, which means when he gets done taking the VA apart, there'll be very little left.
He seems to have placed this scorched earth not only on the VA, but on the EPA. If you look at education and even the Treasury Department, why do you think that the American public is so quick to swallow things that are right before their eyes? And as you say, I mean, it's been documented, I mean, the man tells, what, 8 lies every time he opens his mouth?
Without a doubt. I think it goes back to the racist climate of the early 60s. And gradually this country has changed, but some people still maintain that closet bigotry that now under Trump they feel empowered and they can come out. That's why there's so much hate crime going on right now. In my lifetime, I have had 13 different presidents, some good, some not as good, but I have supported every one because they held that office. But I just cannot support this con man, because that's all he is. And his businesses, he's done nothing but take them to bankruptcy. And from what I can see, the country is headed toward bankruptcy.
Well, only, what is it about right now, $188 trillion in debt that we're going to end up after this administration? And, I mean,
and how do they want to pay for it? They want to reduce our entitlements, that Social Security that you and I have paid into all our life. I can understand the Republican point of view. I mean, if you're very, very rich and you don't work for a living and you live off of your investments, yeah, but there's not that many of them. But they use this advertising through the internet, through Fox News, through Breitbart, and what they do is they convince the gullible in this country that someone else just a little lower on the scale than them is the fault for everything. Just like this imaginary caravan that he sent 5,000 troops to the border to string barbed wire when he could have sent them to California to help with that fire. I got a brother that buys into this stuff. I blocked him on Facebook. I don't want to hear it anymore.
Well, you know, sometimes it's just like anything else. You have to, you know, you have to make those little scouting forays into the foreign, you know, into the foreign country to see what's going on, you know, and make sure you get your, you know, your behind back. But as a Vietnam veteran, how do you feel about our brothers that are suffering from PTSD? And, you know, I'll be one of the first to admit, you know, I mean, I just came off an anger management class in 2004. So, you know, I mean, it's not like it's something that, you know, just goes away. But what do you think about it when you hear a draft dodger saying that soldiers that suffer from PTSD are weak?
I was infuriated when I saw that. Right now, my personal PTSD is President Trump stress disorder. He raises my blood pressure. But I know people that have difficulties coping, and the VA has great systems with mainly counseling, I think, is the best thing. But they do have other treatments, and it seems to work. But a man that was not willing to even go in the rain to honor our veterans from 100 years ago to make such asinine statements just galls me.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad enough that he didn't, you know, he used the rain as an excuse when he was in France, but what was the excuse when he was in Washington? I mean, he couldn't even go to Arlington. He couldn't even go to Arlington.
This is the first time in my lifetime that a president has not gone to Arlington on Veterans Day to honor the Tomb of the Unknown.
Well, Obama didn't go in 2010, but the reason why he didn't go was because he wanted Biden to honor his son, and he didn't want to take, you know, anything from Biden's grief and you know celebration of his son. So, but at least he sent a delegation. I mean, you know, he didn't have an exclamation. At least he told the French it was raining. You know, he didn't tell the American public a thing.
Yes.
We had 77 veterans elected during the midterms. 55 of those were Republicans. Do you think that this is a statement for a change in the GOP?
The GOP that I see today is not the GOP I grew up with. I actually admired Eisenhower and his, if you remember, his industrial military complex, where he warned us of what is actually happening today, where it's all about money for the profits, the people selling to the military. But yeah, the GOP has gone down a terrible rabbit hole, and there's maybe with these new members of Congress, they may have a little more gumption, have some balls, and actually stand up to Trump. I know that's going to happen in the House after the first of the year.
Let's talk a little bit about the Mueller investigation. We keep hearing that there's no collusion, and we keep hearing that, you know, the Russians had nothing to do with him being elected. But once again, going back to fact checking, we know that Russia has hacked into our political system. Two, we know that Trump lost the popular vote. So where is all of this coming from? How do you think that I know you called him a con man, and there's a lot of ways that I agree, but also, you know, if you remember, I believe it might have been 88 or something like that when Oprah first started, Trump said that he was going to run for president, and he said that he was going to run as a Republican because that was the only party that would be dumb enough to accept him.
I remember that.
It seems like his prediction has come true. What do you think?
I think so. I think, it's the closet racists that have come out and decided that this was their man. And the he's not stupid, because he'll pick an issue like abortion and right to life, even though you know that means absolutely nothing to him. But he'll come out with a public statement, just like he came out with a statement in front of the midterms that will have middle-class tax cuts, which you know aren't going to happen. But they believe it. I think if Satan himself ran as a right-to-life GOP, the evangelicals would vote for him. and indeed, I believe Trump might just be, in the evangelicals' term, the Antichrist. I mean, they were warned about him for 2,000 years, and when he finally showed up, they voted for him. And if you look at Scripture, they say they'll wear the mark of the beast on their foreheads, and they all wear them little red hats.
Very, very good there. I kind of like the way you linked that all together. I want to go back to Vietnam, though. You were there a year before me.
1967.
And in 1967, there weren't as many draftees probably in the service as there was come 69
yes.
So I found a much different type of soldier during 67 when we were training, and then 69, 70, when a lot of us were there. And it seemed to be that there was a lot of camaraderie. You might not have liked where you were, but everyone did their job, and they mostly got along.
Yes.
Come 1971, that kind of changed. Not only with the so-called hippie movement back that time, but drugs took over a lot of our soldiers in Vietnam. It ran rampant, and when the drugs ran rampant, it also seemed like the head of racism also ran rampant. You were more divided. You had, the white hillbillies over here. You had the Latinos over here. You had the blacks over here. Do you really see that much change in today's society than we faced when we came home? I'm talking about on the racial side, not necessarily on how we were treated, but just on the racial side, on how we were all seen to be divided as a nation. There were riots everywhere, and it just seemed to never end until, 1972?
Yes. I lived through those times. In Vietnam, I didn't see it as much. I didn't have, I don't remember any draftees, but I was fortunate. I was I wasn't a grunt. I got to fly every day over there. We used to fly up over North Vietnam and listen to what they were doing and try to figure out what they were doing and generate warnings for what they were doing. So I wasn't exposed to that intense ground warfare. It was almost the type of thing that I was flying out of Da Nang, but I mean, I could have flown out of anywhere else within range of whatever plane I had. And Da Nang itself was a rather secure area except for rocket attacks. Other than that, it was a pretty safe place to be. But
we envied you guys up there in Da Nang, believe me. But there were times when we were awful glad to see you fly, boys, too. I mean, you know, come on. as they say in one of the movies, I'll never forget the smell of napalm in the morning.
Well, I understand. But like I say, and I've got a lot of friends that are Vietnam veterans now, and that seems to be a common thing that we were basically brothers. And I don't know that in the 70s in the military that was the case. I got out in 69, so I think I got out just in time.
Yes, you probably did, but as you said, you know, you also lived through it. So what was it like, you know, over here stateside? Because, you know, we were all under the impression that, you know, everyone was backing us. You know, we were going to come home like the guys from World War II.
Parades
and all that.
Never had a parade, but I did go to the parades for everybody that came back from Operation Desert Storm and the Iraqi campaigns. I used to be active in the local VFW, but in my old age, I have found other things that occupy my time. But yes, things are quite different with this generation now. The active soldiers that I meet now seem to be career people that have their shit together.
Well, it's a much volunteer, you know, it's all volunteer. I remember, you know, as a PFC, you know, that $121 a month, and I was glad to get my jump pay and combat pay, you know.
And it was tax-free, too.
Oh, yeah, you know. But, you know, I mean, there were prices to be paid. But I have to ask you one more thing as far as veterans are concerned, because this was something that really irked me. I've played sports most of my life. You know, I'm used to the national anthem being played, da-da-da, and all that. But Trump made taking a knee, and he turned it into a political tool. As a veteran, how did you feel? Did you feel it was a disrespect to your service?
I've been on a journey. My initial knee-jerk reaction was I was very disappointed in what was going on. Until I start reading and studying and understanding what it was all about. And it was not about disrespecting the flag. It was taking a protest. And what I have found that racism is so engraved into the American psyche that when you protest racism, the average person assumes that you're protesting America. And that's not true. I've been following a shooting in Dallas where a white police officer, female, came home, went into the wrong apartment, and shot a black man that lived there. And then just recently, a Chicago security guard stopped the shooting, was holding the suspect at gunpoint, and when the police showed up, a white policeman killed him and shot him dead. So I have learned by digging into this that there is something wrong and the psyche needs to be changed. So I myself personally would much rather take a knee than stand with Trump and what he says. I don't need draft dodgers to tell me to be patriotic.
I almost find it hard to believe, and I'm not saying this in a racist type of way, but as a black man, we've lived with this since Martin Luther King. It might have been, kind of swept under the rug, but today there's social media, there's Instagram, phone cameras, and through technology, things are shown exactly as they are in real time. What part do you see, as an actor and entertainment? How do you feel that the media has played such an important part in letting the American people know what's going on, even though they might not want to accept it or even start calling it fake news?
Well, as a person in the entertainment business, the entertainment business is basically liberals, and basically we got ours, and we want to help everybody else. Whereas I think this conservative end of the business is they got theirs, and screw you, I got mine, and I'm going to let it go at that. But I was originally raised, in the Pittsburgh area, and I never thought of a racial divide. And in the late 80s, I ended up moving to Atlanta, and my eyes were opened quite a bit as to the racism that still exists. But they don't realize they're racists. It's almost like they're frosted flakes where they can't see through the frosted window from their own whiteness, is the only way I can describe it. They just normal. It's like having this every little town down here, and I live out away from the city. Every little town down here has that Confederate statue facing to the east, and it's like, I don't know, it's just ingrained into them. And as people become educated and learn, I think that starts to go away. But it's a process.
A process. Since 1861.
But I think the process has been turned around in the last 2 years with this. It's not trickle-down economics from this White House, it's trickle-down hate. And it's just like Charlottesville with good people on both sides. It's like they are empowered.
Yeah. I guess I know I'm going a little over here and taking a little more of your time, but how did you feel when Trump said that he was a nationalist?
God, it's so easy to paint him in the Hitler mold, but this is exactly what they did in the 1930s. They blamed the press. They made the press the enemy, and everybody that didn't look and wasn't a white Anglo-Saxon like Hitler was second class. And I get that distinct impression from this administration.
Yes, I certainly do. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. I wish we had a little bit more, but I want to also invite you back on the show whenever you have time. But before we let you go, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media and any final thoughts you might have for our audience tonight.
Well, I've enjoyed talking to you. We're old homeboys, basically. And
yeah, I'm from Youngstown.
That's close enough. But myself, about the only thing I'm active on is Facebook, and it's William Tokarski. And I've got 5,000 friends, but you can always follow what I do. I do a little acting. The biggest thing I've fallen into so far is I killed Kevin Hart in the movie Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. So other than that, the people that normally see me a lot on Adult Swim and things like that are a much younger demographic. People that enjoy a herbal escapes. How's that? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, I have strong feelings about it, and I'm not afraid to speak up. But I guess what's happened in my old age is I don't give a shit anymore. So I just, I've tried to be honest with people.
Hey, my first job is waking up in the morning. Anything after that, I can take care of it. So I'm fine.
Yep.
So, as I said, I thank you so much for your time. And don't you have a show currently running?
On TV, it's called Adult. Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell, where I play a demon who works for the devil. But season 4 will be out in 2019 sometime. But it's online. You can just Google Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell, and they'll have a half a dozen episodes available to stream. They're only 11 minutes long because most of this new generation has a short attention span.
But they pay well.
A friend of mine who is a full-time actor, since I'm retired, he says, Billy, he says, it's all gravy for you. And it just supplements. I'm able to do nice things for my grandchildren and my wife. I make a little bit of money.
Yeah, I have to have you back on because I want to talk about Bill Maher and some of those guys that are on. And I'm sure, you would be interested and talk a little bit about, that side of the entertainment business. But we do thank you for your time tonight, and I hope I didn't bore you too much, and I hope you will come back on the show. So you have a great night.
I will be happy to. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
That was our very first guest for the evening. Always like to try to get the veterans' point of view, make sure that we're heard. I'm also, our next guest is going to be a retired Army, Mr. R.K. Butler, and I'm going to grab him on the line right now, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the effects of this particular administration on veterans and the future of our grandchildren possibly having to hold on to all this debt. So I'm going to get Mr. Butler on the phone. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer than others. So let's see. Hope we're not having technical difficulties tonight. We have a lot of a lot to cover. And we have a great panel tonight. So let me try this number again. Okay. I believe we have a connection. I actually need an assistant. Anyone want to apply for a job? First one. No, seriously. This is Mr. Richard Butler. As I said, if you're on Facebook, he's R.K. Butler, and he does have some very strong opinions. We're calling his landline right now. Perhaps that's why we're having problems getting his connection. I'm hoping. Maybe it's the landline. Let's see. Let's see if we connect with him by phone. Not exactly sure why he's not picking up, but hey. Okay, I guess we're not going to be able to get Mr. Butler on the line tonight. So let's see if we can ad-lib a little bit here.
Well, you're calling from California, aren't you?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm calling from California.
Yeah, we're a little different in time frame.
Yeah, it's 10:30 your time, I believe.
Right. Well, 10:53. It's almost 11 o'clock now. Well, almost 11. But I was kind of interested and kind of wondering. You know, I thought, you know, you said you're going to call on Thursday, but what can I do for you at this point?
Well, we're on in. I just talked to another veteran. Of course, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and so is Mr. Sikorsky. I thought I'd get your opinion on a few of the things that has happened in this administration. First of all, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your career?
Can you hold on just a second?
Okay.
Okay. So you want to know a little about me? What is it that you want to know? I mean,
I saw your uniform on Facebook, and it said that you were retired Army. So I was thinking, you know, maybe we could find out, you know, a little bit about your branch of service, how long you served, and you know, maybe your MOS, you know, a few things like that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I went in the Army in June of '76, and I went to Germany and spent about 14 and a half years in Germany. And I served during, like I said on Facebook, you know, I had on there where I served, you know, during, you know, five presidents. I served during the first Gulf War. I served in Somalia. And then I retired out of Fort Drum in upstate New York in 1997.
Like you said, your career spanned quite a few presidents, and I'm going to kind of pick at this present administration because, you know, as a Vietnam vet, I do have a lot of issues with the VA administration. It's become a lot better. But I believe that, is it true now that veterans only get 5 years of treatment when they come out of service, or is it different? You know, depending on your term of service.
Well, there's some other things that I've learned over the years about how the serving in the military has changed. In reference to, you know, during my time when I went in. It was some years ago that I had an opportunity to talk to a soldier that had a Bradley vehicle on display. And, you know, he explained to me, you know, the difference in, you know, the things that they, you know, get, you know, while serving in the military in reference to what we did, you know, what we got, the amount of money that they have to pay, you know, for their, you know, to get their GI Bill and other benefits and stuff like that. But as far as with the Veterans Administration, I'm not real sure. I know a lot of people, I saw on Facebook where a lot of people come out and they talk about the VA and you know, they, you know, like you said, that, you know, the VA has gotten a lot better. I think it depends on the geographical location, where you're coming from, what you're used to. Because I've been dealing with the Veterans Administration for over 20 years. And, you know, when I first got out of the military, the VA was in, it was horrible. I mean, it's just actually hard to, you know, explain. It shocked me, you know, and, as years went on, you know, I had to fight, literally fight for everything that I had, you know, what I thought I had coming to me, treatment and stuff that I needed after serving. I had a lot of issues. You know, I was injured in Somalia. I came out, and there was a lot of things that I thought, you know, was going to be taken care of, and it never did. And for years and years and years, I fought. And because of that, I ended up far worse off than what I would have been if they would have taken care of me. And even today, you know, I consider myself to be somewhat of a lucky individual based on the fact that, you know, I'm 100% disabled. I have my retirement, which is Humana TRICARE for Life, and I have, you know, my Social Security and Medicare. If it wouldn't be for that, I would really be in a lot of trouble. Because to get treatment through the Veterans Administration today, even now, I think is not what it should be.
Yeah, like you, I fought for quite some time. I actually was dismissed from the service in 1976.
It's amazing.
You know, I went through the going to, you know, having a 7 o'clock appointment in the morning and waiting around until 4 in the evening and then telling you to come back the next day after you've driven 65 miles to get the appointment. So, you know, now in 2003, I moved out here to the West Coast and I moved to San Diego and I found out that the VA system was much better. I don't know whether it was because, you know, there were so many active duty around or you know, but I was able to talk to the right people. I was able to get the treatment, you know, that I needed. I had a couple of heart attacks a few years ago, but, you know, it seems to me under the current administration, if I, I would have been SOL. Yeah. because my treatment would have ended, even though my problems, like you said, were, you know, service discipline, service connected. But I do kind of digress here. But I want to your comments on some of the Trump, on some of the statements that Trump has made. He talks about his ancestors and how they helped settle America. Well, first of all, his grandfather got here in 1885 at the age of 16 to avoid service in his own country. Then after the Spanish-American War, which he didn't serve in, not one member of the Trump family, not one member has ever served in the military. His father was investigated by Congress for wartime profiteering. We're not even going to talk about the rent control, which came about 10 years later. But having not one of his sons, not one of his current three sons have ever served in the military. So when he tries to use the term or title of Commander-in-Chief, how does it make you feel as someone that has served his country for all, you know, for throughout his whole career? How do you feel about that?
Well, for me, I think it's appalling. I mean, I'm not going to blame Trump for the faults of his father, his grandfather, and things of that nature. The same that, you know, well, basically, I mean, you know, but I mean, we all know, you know, to a certain extent who he is. I mean, I've known about Trump for, my God, for years. I mean, like I said, I lived in Europe for quite some years, and, you know, Trump was always a, you know, someone that people talk about. I mean, even now when I go back, I mean, we usually go back to Europe on an annual basis, and, you know, as far as when it comes to Europeans, I mean, Trump is not a very liked person by any means. But, I mean, he is a part of an elitist group of people that, you know, elitist, privileged, you know. I mean, we have quite a few of them. I mean, you got to look at even, you know, George W. Bush, Clinton. I mean, most of our newest presidents that we've had, you know, since George W. Bush. I mean, it's kind of hard to put, you know, did they serve? What did they do to get over? But when it comes to Trump, it really doesn't matter because, I mean, this man, I mean, I can't imagine how anyone cannot see the fraud in him. You know, I mean, the fact that he is utterly fake. I mean, even on Facebook, I've always referred to him as the accidental fake president. I mean, he did not run for president because he wanted to be president. He ran for president because he wanted to up his brand. You know, he never expected to be president. And the fact that he is president to this day is going to be quite detrimental to our country. I mean, just when you look at what he has done by sending troops to the border, total disregard for these individuals. The fact that, you know, a lot of them have served you know, in Afghanistan and other places in the world numerous times, and, you know, coming up on the holiday seasons and things like that, you know, he didn't care whether or not, you know, they would rather be with their families. He took a political situation and he used them for that purpose, and it's horrible. And the reason he did this is a man who does not understand honor. He doesn't understand honor. He has absolutely no ethics. Everything that he does and everything that he has ever done has always been about him, his brand, his family, to a certain extent, and that's it. I mean, the fact that he's the president of the United States is a travesty. I mean, really. I mean, 10 years ago, I mean, if somebody would have said, you know, hey, you know, 10 years from now, guess who's going to be president of the United States? I would have thought, you know what, you're batshit crazy. It's never going to happen. Even when he was running for, I was in Europe when he announced that he was going to run for president. And everybody, as far as all the people that I know, family and all that, I mean, they were freaking out. They said, what? And I was like, hey, don't worry about it. This guy's never in a million years going to make, you know, become president of the United States. And, you know, you know, spoke too soon. Yeah, but.
Let's kind of stay on that theme about truce. On the border, because he called 5,000 troops, I believe the number was, down to the border, but it seems like now most of those soldiers have been returned to base or recalled
right.
Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, an invasion, I mean, you know,
totally political.
But just stand, you know, on that particular thing. How do you think this affects the job of a non-com, who's the backbone of most military units? How do you think, you know, this affects his job in keeping the morale of his troops?
It's difficult. It's very difficult. I mean, that was one of the things I mentioned on Facebook. I put on there, you know, that I had served under five presidents. And during that time, I swore many times the oath. And I, to this day, if I would have had to have gotten to a point, or if I would have gotten to a point where I would have had to have reenlisted, or extended my service like I did many times when I was in, and I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could swear to obey the orders of the President of the United States, knowing who the President of the United States is, put my life on the line. And that's something I don't know. It's a very hard question. It's a very hard question to answer when I think about the soldiers that are out there performing their duties, and the NCOs and stuff that are in charge of them. I mean, how do you justify that kind of stuff? I mean, how do you justify giving orders? I mean, because, you know, in the military, we was always told that, you know, yeah, you have to follow the orders of your superiors, but you do not follow orders that are unlawful. I mean, you can actually be court-martialed for that, and that's the way I look at it. I mean, you know, when I hear orders that are just like this here coming out of this administration, I look at these as unlawful orders, orders that I don't think I would have been able to have followed. Because they're not orders that make any sense. They hold no merit. And they actually put people's lives in danger.
It's funny that you say that because, I mean, I remember even in Vietnam, we were supported by our allies. We had Canadian troops there. We had Australian troops. We had South Korean troops. And now it seems like every chance that Trump gets, he wants to bash our allies. He doesn't want to think about their commitments and the contributions that they have made. And you mentioned Europe. How do you think our allies feel about our commitment after hearing the rhetoric of Trump toward Russia and North Korea?
Well, during the time I served over, you know, I first got to Europe in January of 1977, and I went through and participated in numerous maneuvers which was called Reforger, Return of Forces to Europe. During that time frame and up through, which was the worst of the Cold War, a lot of times in the field with French soldiers, German soldiers, Australian soldiers, Canadian soldiers, it was amazing. And I still think to this day, when it comes right down to it, when it comes to soldiers, when it comes to the armies, I think they still have, the confidence and the respect of the military. But I don't think they have the confidence and the respect of the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, to make the right decisions, the decisions that need to be made that will not only protect them, but also protect us. But when it comes down to the soldiers, I think that is the respect is there, the trust. But the bottom line, it always comes down to what the president of the United States is, what decisions they're going to make. But I don't think that our allies, I would be pretty confident to say that, I don't think any of our allies have any trust in what our now commander-in-chief, any decisions that he would have to make or would make or is making to this point in time about things that are going around the world.
The last thing I kind of want to get your thoughts about is, everybody talks about health care, Obamacare, and all that stuff there, but I think veterans are in a very special situation, and I think that they deserve special recognition. Do you think that veterans should get free health care for life?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at it this way. I mean, you look at the politicians, you look at our senators and our congressmen. I mean, they get in there, they serve a few years, maybe more, but they come out of there with full retirement, full health care, free education for their children. Why wouldn't a veteran get that? I mean, congressmen and senators, they always tell us, say, hey, look, we served our country. We're serving our country. But didn't veterans serve their country? I mean, we have a lot of congressmen. We have a lot of senators that have served their country, I mean, literally in the military. I mean, no matter how you serve your country, it is serving your country. And, if our politicians can get the health care and the benefits that they get for serving, then why shouldn't our veterans get that? I always say that, I consider myself blessed right now at this point in time in my life because of the fact that I have the health care that I would say that our senators and congressmen have based on my situation. And this is not only the health care that our veterans should receive, but this is the health care that all Americans should receive, regardless of who they are. All the years that I served, all the years I spent in Germany, my daughter was born in Germany. My wife, she's German. She worked in Germany, and the health care over there was astronomical. I mean, the United States government didn't pay for anything when it came to my daughter, her birth, the medical problems that she had. Even in a couple of situations that I had was paid by the German government, was paid by the health care over there because my wife worked. And this is something that all Americans should have. We're the richest country in the world, supposedly. But, no American should have to go without health care in this country. It's the same thing with everything. The same thing with food, housing. We like to look at that kind of stuff as a privilege, but it's not. It's a right.
Yeah. And you have to wonder, you know, how did we get to this point where your rights are separated and all of a sudden they become privileges? I have to ask you, because once again, you said that you spent a lot of time overseas. What was your reaction when 45 said that military ballots shouldn't be counted?
Unbelievably horrible. I mean, I was completely dumbfounded by it. You know, and the thing that kills me about it is I kind of wonder, you know, because it's, you know, especially the stuff that's been going on with a lot of these elections and all the different states, you know, when they were talking about absentee ballots and mail-in ballots and things like that. It makes me wonder how many of my mail-in ballots that I had sent in when I was in the military didn't get counted, got thrown in the garbage.
it's when you start thinking about somebody undermining, you know, the election process, and you start wondering whether or not your vote counted. Are we really at this stage, you know, in our lives and in this country, where, you know, I mean, you fought for this right. This right is given to you under the Constitution. I mean, you know, it's. Lastly, the GOP is as you were talking about, you know, things that everybody are entitled to, things that are a right, not a privilege. But it seems like now the GOP is talking about taking away Social Security and Medicare. Social Security is something that we've paid into all of our lives. Where does this come between a right and a privilege in your scale?
Well, it's just completely ridiculous. I mean, to me, I mean, you, like you said, you know, it's something that we paid in. I mean, the way I've always looked at it, people need to look up in the dictionary the true definition of what a privilege is, what a right is, and vice versa. But, I mean, the thing is that, yeah, you pay into something for your whole life, like we do with Medicare and with Social Security. It's not it's a privilege. It's a privilege because I paid into it, but it's also a right. I am privileged to that because I paid into it. It would be the same thing as if an insurance company or insurance companies, although people pay insurance for their cars, you know, that, you know, once you get into that, guess what? You know, you can't use this because, you know, you don't have a right to it no more. We consider that a privilege. And, you know, you got all these, and I hate to say these ultra-right-wing people. I mean, that's the thing that's really becoming horrible in this country, this separation that we've got. But even a lot of these people think, and I would like to say to them, well, if you think it's a privilege to get Social Security or Medicare, or if you think it's socialism, it's the same thing with your car insurance, or if you're paying into health care, or any other, or life insurance, you know? It's like you get into an accident. Oh, no, I'm not going to use it. No, I can't use that because that's socialism or, you know, that, man, whatever. You know, it's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. I just think most Americans or Americans today, based on a lot of the crap that's going on, they're lost. They're lost in the haze and the fog of all of the garbage that's being put out. By a lot of people out there that have a lot of hatred for this country, and in my opinion, aren't really true Americans. They don't really care about the American way of life. So, I mean, but, you know, taking into consideration, though, what happened here during the midterm elections, I don't think America is as divided as most people want us to think they are.
Do you when it comes to division and race, you said that you didn't believe that we are as far divided as a lot of people think. What kind of led you to that conclusion when you have presidents and senators that are encouraging violence? You have numerous cases of police misconduct. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with fear. I think it has to do with the fear of certain people losing power. I mean, look at the midterm elections. Look how many new faces we have in Congress now. Not just new faces, but younger faces, the new generation. I mean, I've always believed that we needed fresh blood. Fresh blood, new faces, new ideas, new ideologies, things of that nature, things that more fit the era that we live in today. And all of this hatred, all this, you know, fear that you see in the media, certain media outlets, these are people that fear change. They fear the change. They see it coming. They don't want it. And they'll do whatever they can to hold on to their power, no matter what it takes, until the bitter end. But it's inevitable; they will lose. I was really fearful of this upcoming election. I really was. But after seeing what's happened, I would really like to have seen the Democrats take back the Senate. But I think they did a very good job. I think the American people have spoken. I think the younger generations have come out and said, you know, to a certain extent, enough's enough. We're going to have to, you know, take back, you know, what's ours. And it may take, you know, a little more time, even more than my lifetime. But I think America will pull through.
When you mentioned the elections, there were 77 veterans elected during the midterms. 55 of them were Republicans. Do you think that signals a change in the GOP?
Could be. Could be. I can't. I mean, I don't have any animosity to a certain extent against the party, you know, the Republican Party, for what it stood for. Throughout my life, I have voted both Republican and Democrat. I've always been an independent. To me, it's not all about, you know, being dedicated to one party or the other. It's about who's more qualified for the job, whether it's a Republican, whether it's a Democrat. And in my opinion, you know, I think right now, with what's been going on, I think the Republican Party has kind of lost their way. And I think more than ever, not just the Republican Party, but I think the Republican Party needs more newer, fresh blood with newer ideas, newer ideology, more down to earth, more attuned to the new era, the same as the Democrats. And, you know, when you look at the elections and you look at the people that were voted in, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yes.
Times are changing. They are changing, and it's going to continue.
But the Democrats can't just keep running on. Look at what Trump did. They have to present their own platform. That's the thing that I.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. That's one of the things I've always said. I said, you know, when you look at all these people that supported Trump, that are the hardcore, can't bend them even if you wanted to. These are people that I've always considered as a lost cause. You just got to forget about them. You're not going to change their minds. They're a minority. You're just going to have to push that aside, push Trump aside, and you're going to have to, you know, campaign, you're going to have to push, you're going to have to support new ideas. I'm hoping that once the Republican or once the Democrats take control of the House in January, that's what they do. They don't try to be vindictive. They don't try to get even. They actually go and fight for what this country really needs. Because Trump's a lost cause. Any hardcore supporters of Trump's a lost cause. You're not going to change his mind. You're not going to change their minds. Trying to fight and you know, change all of that is just a waste of time. You have to go with the majority, and I think the majority of Americans in this country want what's right for everybody. And I think that's what's most important.
You talk about Trump and you talk about his base. What did you think when he called himself a nationalist?
I don't think he really understands what that means, to be honest with you. I think he is just trying to play to his base. He's trying to send little, well, you know, like they say, dog whistles, little hints, little things out there to keep his crowd going so that when he goes to his rallies, he gets that, like an opioid high off of it. That's what he wants. That's what he likes. But other than that, ain't nothing that I would be too concerned with. I think it's just, it's such a minority group in this country that I think in time they will be, you know, silenced to a certain degree that it won't even matter anymore.
You spoke earlier of your family and your grandkids and whatnot. What do you think about, I think now it's estimated to be almost $188 trillion in debt that we're going to be. That's going to be, you know, something that they're going to have to pay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how do you think that people are still thinking that this is this tax cut that he gave the rich and famous, has it really just further shown that there's a big division between the middle class or is there a middle class? I've always thought lately that the middle class has been kind of torn away from us. You're either rich or you're poor. There is no middle ground.
Well, I see, that's something that I've always had a lot of problems with when I got back to this country. Because it wasn't the country that I grew up in. And over the years, you know, it's one of the things that we as Americans, we have a horrible problem with. We put each other into classes. Middle class, upper class, lower class, poor, homeless, white, black, Hispanic. I mean, every time we hear about voting, we hear about the black vote, the white vote, the Hispanic vote. We don't hear about the American vote. We don't hear about cutting taxes for upper class, you know, or Americans. We always hear about the middle class. Just like Trump was talking about, he was going to give a 10% tax cut for the middle class, which that was a total bunch of crap. But the thing is Americans, we need to stop putting each other into classes. We need to stop considering ourselves middle class or upper class or what I call ultra class, the untouchables, the elites. You know, because I look at myself, I don't put myself in any class. I work my ass off. I serve my country. I live a very good life. I wouldn't really know what class to put. I put myself in, I would say, an elite class. That's how I feel about myself. I don't look at myself. I don't degrade myself by putting myself into a class. And I think that's where we make a mistake. And we listen to our politicians, and we allow them to categorize ourselves. We allow them to dictate who we are. Oh, you're poor. You're that. And I think it's wrong. I think it's stupid. But, you know, like you said, as far as the tax cuts go in this country, I mean, when you look at all the presidents that have served, I mean, at least in my time, it's always been the Democratic Party that are the ones that clean up the mess from the Republican Party or the Republican president. And that's the thing that kind of makes me wonder why it is that Americans, even Americans that consider themselves to be on the Republican side, this false narrative, this, I don't know, but I never did understand why they don't see it. I mean, I look at what Barack Obama did. Even now, Trump is taking credit for what Barack Obama achieved. Everything that Barack Obama achieved after George W. Bush's presidency is still in play. It's like he threw a ball and it's still in the air. And all the accomplishments, all the even the job growth, the growth in the economy, all of this is still remnants of what Barack Obama did. But Trump takes credit for it. There's no president out there. When you think about when Barack Obama took over after George W. Bush, look how long it took him to get the ball rolling. I mean, even after 2 years, things were still not looking very good. It took a long time. So there's no way that Trump can take credit for anything, because this is still the legacy of the former president. Now, the chances that he might screw it up, those are pretty good.
I would say that they're more than just pretty good. He is trying to erase everything that had Obama's name on it. I guess this is something that I never had to experience. I think we were more under the don't ask, don't tell movement. And I guess it was also during the time that you were in the service. But in March, Trump tried to sign, or I guess he did sign an executive order that was banning transgender people from the military. Some of these people have made careers out of the military, but all of a sudden, according to Trump, we couldn't afford to take them medically. They were a burden. During your time in service, did you ever run into any of these specific situations?
In my time in the service, no, absolutely, I did not. I didn't really start well. Not as far as being in the military, but in civilian life in Germany, yes. And then after getting back to the United States, I did. But in the military, during my time, no, things were pretty much under wraps. I had no experiences with that whatsoever.
Lastly, I guess as a military man, I'm also going to ask your opinion on this, because I'm not opposed to guns. I'm opposed to certain people having guns, and I'm opposed to certain guns being out for public consumption. I believe that an assault weapon, I don't think you need an assault weapon to kill a bear, a deer, an elk, you know. I don't see, unless you're qualified, I don't see where a civilian has any use for this type of weapon. what are your thoughts on you know, civilians having access to basically military grade weapons to hunt, to so called hunt game?
Well, I tell you, that's a good one there, because I grew up as a hunter. I mean, I hunted with my father when I was a kid, and I always brought that up when people talk about it. And I always remembered going to gun stores, places where my dad would get his ammo and stuff like that. And when I would go into these stores, I never saw an assault rifle. An M16, well, back in that day, there was an M16. It would have been a
AR-15,
you know, carbine, or, you know, or anything of that nature. But I never saw any kind of assault rifles or anything that did not, or like you said, anything that was military-related on the wall, on display, for sale. They were basically hunting rifles, shotguns, high-powered, you know, other high-powered hunting rifles and stuff like that. But now when you go into a store, I don't care where it's at, that's basically the bulk of what's on the wall. It's AK-47s, AR-15s, and other types of assault rifles, all decorated and made to look like what, you know, the generation of today that, you know, wants these weapons, you know, want all the accessories and all that kind of stuff. But even after I got out of the military, I picked up hunting. And all the people I ever hunted with, I never saw a single person that would that hunted with an AK-47 or an AR-15, because they're not meant for hunting. An AR-15 and an AK-47 shoots a round that's designed for one thing and one thing only, and that's to kill human beings. Most of the people that want these weapons are really, I don't know, I just think it's, I hate to say it, but I think it's a replacement for certain types of manhood or something, I don't know. But, I mean, when I look at the fact that I, all the years that I served in the military, I have absolutely no desire to own an assault rifle. None. Not only that, but I have absolutely no necessity to carry a weapon for protection. And to be honest with you, I don't even want to carry a weapon. If I have to carry a weapon in this country for protection, I don't want to be here anymore. But there's a lot of people out there that are convinced they have to have these weapons for protection. Some people use it, say, hey, you know, like you said, for hunting. No, nobody hunts with an assault rifle. At least I've never seen anybody. I just don't, I don't see the purpose in it. Like you said, too, I have nothing against the Second Amendment. I have no problems with people owning guns. I own several guns myself, but I don't own anything that's designed for one purpose, and that's to kill human beings. And there's no way that anybody can tell me that an AK-47 or an M16, based on the ammunition that it uses, is not designed for that purpose, period.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, and you know, I mean, we've seen so many cases of people that are mentally handicapped in one way or another, being able to either purchase these type of weapons or being given those weapons by relatives. As I asked you earlier, do you think that there should be an extreme penalty? I mean, most European countries and Asian countries, to be caught with a gun is almost a life sentence.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's no doubt there should be penalties. I mean, if there was ever a country in this world that needed to have gun control, gun reform, it's the United States of America. I mean, I can't imagine how anybody doesn't see that. I mean, when you look at the number of Americans, more than, what is it, somewhere close to 80% of Americans agree that we need comprehensive gun control regulations, background checks. But it doesn't happen. And it hasn't happened because the Republicans have been in control. And the NRA, I mean, everybody knows that the NRA has pretty much got the Republicans in their pocket. It's all about money.
Yes.
But, I mean, if there was ever a country that needed gun control, I mean, God, like I said, I have no problems with the Second Amendment. I don't want to see people have their guns. I don't want my guns taken from me. But then again, I don't own anything that is a military-style rifle. Everything I have is pretty much geared towards hunting.
Yeah,
I have a couple of handguns. Most of them are target pistols.
Yeah, I mean, you know, target shooting is a sport,
yeah.
And I mean, there are things that, I mean, you know, it's like I said, I have no problem with the Second Amendment whatsoever, but I do have a problem with stupidity, and sometimes that looks, I think that's what this is all about. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us tonight. Why don't you give us any final thoughts you may have, and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Well, the way I see it, the way things are going, Americans need to get a grip. I mean, we need to calm down. We need to start thinking rationally. We need to start coming together. We need to put our petty differences aside, even when it comes to politics, and remember just exactly who we are. We're Americans. We're Americans first, and that's it. And all this division and bickering over things that a lot of politicians that have created because they have a one-sided agenda, we need to put that aside. That's pretty much the way I see it. I mean, we just need to be who we are, and that is Americans first. And there's just no way to replace that. And as far as social media, I'm on Facebook, RK Butler, I'm not on Twitter, I don't Instagram or anything like that. I pretty much joined Facebook actually less than 2 years ago, but yeah, that's pretty much it. I just think we, in this country, we need to get a grip. We need to take a step back, seriously think about who we are and what the true cause of all this chaos is, and just say enough's enough.
Yeah, America, you know, has always been great. We didn't need anyone to try to make it great again. We are great.
Absolutely.
And those of us that have served in the military feel that way. And, you know, like I said, it's very hard for me to separate my feelings of disgust for a draft dodger when, you know, I know exactly the effects of that. You know, I mean, I've seen it, you know, on a first-hand basis. I think our military, I can't say we get the respect around the world that I believe we should, but I do think that having this lunatic as our commander in chief kind of cheapens the uniform as far as world prestige. When people think that your president is weak, and that he sees, they see what the world is doing. It's hard to think of America as the best or number one like we used to be. It seems like everyone is competing. I don't know whether it's Russia, whether it's China. It seems like there's a lot of disrespect that was never seen in this country. So I thank you so much tonight for talking with us, Mr. Butler, and I look forward to having you on the show again. Thank you so much.
All right. I appreciate it, and thanks a lot.
Have a great night.
You too.
Well, everyone, we talked to Mr. R.K. Butler as well as Mr. William Tikarski. So we had a great show for tonight, and we look forward to talking to you again next week right here on the Political Consciousness of West Coast Steeler Fan. Have a great night, everyone. Look forward to talking to you next week.